Hey, how are you? If you're new here, welcome. Something Shifted is about identity after interruption, about who we become after the lifequake hits, and the stories we tell ourselves when everything changes. And I think you're going to like it here. My name is Sean, and this is Something Shifted. Today's story belongs to Josh.
And now I'm a man, and I'm weeping at the gravesite. It was just like I knew then that I'm mourning now.
That's next. Right after this. If you believe that rest is a luxury, we can't be friends. Real change is exhausting, and even when your mind is ready, your body has kept the score, so it can't keep up with proper recovery, which is why I started taking Solol's magnesium glycinate. It helps with muscle energy, nervous system support, and honestly, I'm feeling a lot less fatigued. You can learn more about Solol and their full range of supplements for healthy aging on Solol, solal.co.za. There are some people in the world who just always seem happy, and most of them get under my skin. But not Josh. Josh and I go way back, like the start of my radio career, way back. From the day we met, Josh always seemed happy. You know, like the color yellow or a Labrador puppy. A twinkle in his eye, a genuine smile on his face. Which is why we gave him the nickname Chesechi. Because he has a face that always makes us smile back.
I think I had a pretty regular childhood, pretty happy childhood. I had a lot of friends, and we lived in a little cul-de-sac, which meant a lot of time for play and just fun kid stuff.
Turns out, Josh is somewhat of a miracle baby, because after his older brother was born, his mom became very ill.
They'd told my mom that after my brother, she can have no more kids. So my parents were not expecting to have another child, and they were not planning to, you know, even think about that, because doctors were like, this could lead to complications in the next pregnancy, so rather not. And then I arrived, surprisingly, and they decided to go through with the pregnancy. Everything seemed to go fine.
When people seem happy, genuinely happy, not the OTT, toxic positivity kind of happy, but the quiet, consistent kind of happy. I guess we assume that they're okay. I mean, you know that they must have dealt with some stuff, but you just figure it wasn't that bad because they're happy.
I'd say probably somewhere in my primary school years, illness came back.
Josh's mom had been diagnosed with lupus, which flared up significantly after her first pregnancy with his brother. Lupus is a chronic autoimmune disease where your immune system gets confused and it starts to attack healthy tissue in your body. And after his brother was born, his mom was in and out of hospital for 2 years. But over time, things got better. They had Josh, and thereafter, a stretch of very healthy years before his mom's lupus became a real challenge again.
And then it was sort of in and out of hospital. It affected her kidneys, which meant that she had to be on dialysis, I think, 2 or 3 times a week. So that was something that I remember quite vividly as a routine, you know, going straight from school to the hospital, you know, basically to hang with my mom and dad for 2 to 3 hours while she's on the dialysis machines. And that was like a Thursday afternoon. And then on Saturday, she would be on almost like the drip. And that was something that she did at home. But other than that, like, it was a pretty happy childhood, pretty creative. That, for me, felt like my normal.
Kids are pretty great like that. The bad stuff is bad. But the good stuff can be so good that they just get on with it.
Okay, mom's sick. She's in and out of hospital. She bounces back really quickly. So this is just our regular. This is our normal thing that happens in our family. Not really considering that other families don't have this complication.
Josh had found a way to be happy in his normal, even though his normal was quite different to that of his friends. Although his mum was quite sick, Josh was a 12-year-old kid, so his parents didn't discuss all the details and the implications with him. Even when she was hospitalized, they did their best to protect him. It was a regular Sunday morning in March. The house was quiet, so 12-year-old Josh crept out of bed to squeeze in some video gaming before a day full of church and friends, taking care not to wake his sleeping family.
And I remember I was playing WWE SmackDown, and that's when they phoned.
Josh hadn't realized that he was home alone. He thought everyone else was sleeping when the ringing interrupted his gaming.
Nobody was around. I was at home.
Which is when the voice on the other end said,
"Your mom's passed away now."
And even then it was like I didn't know what to make of it.
Josh's family, his dad, his grandmother, his aunt, they were all at the hospital. They knew that the time had come to say goodbye. But nobody had told Josh. Twelve-year-old Josh was all alone in that moment and needed to make sense of something so big. Something that didn't fit into his frame of reference.
Because this thing was so routine and so regularly happening, this in and out of hospital, to me it didn't feel weird that she'd passed away immediately. It felt almost like, ah, she's just gonna, you know, she'll bounce back. That was kind of like the narrative. Don't worry, you know, it's gonna be okay. Mom's gonna be back soon. I guess my programming at that time was, you know, this is normal. And even afterwards, after everyone had come home and the mourning process had begun, it still felt like just a regular day to me.
Because it was a Sunday. People came over like they would on any given Sunday. Except in this case, they were there to mourn the loss of his mom. So although that Sunday was not normal, for 12-year-old Josh, there were enough normal things to hold on to.
It just felt like another normal day. There were obviously moments when coming back to normal life after having gone through the, you know, the funeral and all of those arrangements that, okay, she's not here anymore.
Of course, as time moved on, the absence of his mom became more noticeable and sometimes in unexpected ways.
Especially because she was a maths teacher and she always used to help me with my homework. And then I experienced like a, you know, very stark drop in my grades after she passed because it was natural for her to help me with my mathematics. So when I wasn't excelling anymore, it was like, hey, something's wrong now. That was one of the few moments where it was like, okay, something's really different now.
Josh's mom was the warmth of their house, the life of the party. Of course, he still had his dad and his older brother.
But our relationships were kind of still pretty much very pedestrian. Like my dad, my brother and I had kind of like this very formal relationship where it's like we don't really go further than, hey, how's the weather? which I didn't figure that was weird because that was just normal.
Regardless of how happy you are, it is normal to cry, to grieve when you lose someone. But what if you don't? What if you just don't? What if you dodge the sadness, you slip and slide, and that slow wrecking ball of grief just swings right by you?
I feel like what happened was I just carried on having these normal days of just filling my day with friends and activities and gaming. And I think because of that, the impact wasn't like as sudden.
There was the gaming and school. Josh has loads of friends and of course the gaming. And there were moments when the grief almost had a chance to break through the normal, like when a teacher pulled Josh aside shortly after his mom had passed away.
took me aside after class and she was like, Josh, just wanted to find out if you and your dad are going for therapy or counseling or whatever. And I was like, no. She's like, well, do you want that? Because maybe the school can arrange or recommend somebody. And I was like, no, we good, you know. Okay, cool. But that was something we never spoke about. We never spoke about, like, going for counseling or therapy. But I actually realized now that maybe we should have.
Maybe they should have taken the time to talk, to grieve together. But life just kept happening.
My mom died on the 18th of March. My brother's wedding was on the 7th of April. And they had a wedding in Cape Town. And so this whole thing basically happened on the edge of the brand new thing that was about to begin for my brother. So very confusing space, especially for a 12-year-old.
At the time of his mom's passing, Josh and his family had been living in Johannesburg. And his mom died just before Josh moved to high school.
I was about to go to this very prestigious boys' school, and it was almost like the path was mapped for me. It was like, okay, you're going to go to this school, you're going to go into a traditional career path, do something that we couldn't do, you know, become a lawyer or doctor or something like this. You know, there's almost like a prescribed path.
Which is when things started to change. Even if for a while, 12-year-old Josh still felt like it was normal. First, they relocated from Johannesburg to Vredenburg on the west coast, which is on the opposite side of the country.
It's like a town that never changes, like a timeless place. And my parents lived there before I was born.
Today, Josh can identify this move as a way his dad might have been secretly coping with the loss of his wife. By going back to the place with good memories. Once in Vredenburg, Josh was enrolled in a co-ed high school.
Now I'm not in this sort of very patriarchal, masculine world where it's just kill or be killed, the boys' school that I was at. Now I'm suddenly in this very creative atmosphere. It felt almost like coming to Cape Town was also this place where the becoming started.
And that is where Josh started becoming a storyteller.
Yeah, so I've been into storytelling in various formats my whole life, really. I feel like I'm just completely obsessed with it.
Between school and gaming, and friends and gaming, Josh had found his musical talent.
Songs have just been an immediate format for me to explore that. But when I look back on it, like if I look back at the course of my life professionally, it's almost like it's all come back down to stories.
That's because stories are part of Josh's heritage.
My parents, interestingly, they are from the small town where the only thing you could do was tell stories. They're from a sort of like a pre-TV era as well. So it's like the only thing you can do in this hot, arid place is tell stories. And so I'm like sitting there in the company of all of these people and I'm like, okay, actually, this is part of my lineage. You know, this is part of my DNA.
Josh's love for storytelling informed his decisions at university, including signing up at the campus radio station, which is where we met around 2007. Radio, of course, is a natural fit for storytellers like us.
This is why I studied theater and studied acting. It was almost like an instinct that I had that the things that I really enjoy, the art that I really enjoy, is a way for you to explore an imagined world.
He couldn't have been aware of it at the time, but ever since he was a kid, Josh had been using stories to make sense of the world around him.
I feel like a lot of maybe what was happening when my mom passed away was me escaping into imaginary places. I think that escaping into these created worlds has been, for me, has really been almost like a godsend in the sense that it's something that I can always turn to when I'm not really sure of what I'm thinking about.
So Josh had music in his fingertips, stories in his ears, and imaginary worlds in his mind when he chose this less than clear path.
I once asked a lecturer when I was at university, why do people study drama? Because there's so many reasons why you shouldn't. And the guy answered, so you hear it because you want to answer the question, Who am I? Why am I? And is that okay?
As a young man, Josh thought he knew the answers to these questions, or at least he was confident that he was on his way to knowing them. Ah, the youthful naivety of our 20s. Josh was happy. The yellow or a Labrador puppy's kind of happy, and things around him, as far as he was concerned, were normal. And then his grandmother died. Josh was 27 years old when his Oma passed away. She'd lived a full life. She was 92 years old, and her passing wasn't sudden. This time Josh knew it was coming. He wasn't out of the loop, and he was older and wiser. So why did his grandmother's passing disrupt his normal more than his mom's death 15 years earlier? Why was he overcome by grief this time around? And why was he waking up crying?
I woke up weeping in the middle of the night, weeping like sore. You know, have you ever wept where you feel like it's sore? You physically feel this is pain now. It's not like I'm just crying because I'm feeling a little emotional. This is like deep weeping, almost like shout crying, you know?
Josh was processing old wounds in his dreams. In this dream, Josh was having a conversation with his dad. His dad comes from a baby boomer generation, you know, the men don't have emotions era. And although Josh had seen his dad express emotion, it would take a long time before that would surface, which means conversations about feelings were always just awkward.
So in this dream, I had this conversation with him where I was like, okay, well, Dad, how did you deal with your mom passing away? Like, how did you ever get over this? And in the dream, he said something like, well, you know, you just accept it and you push it down. You push the emotions and the feelings down.
It was in this very moment that Josh woke up weeping, as if the wrecking ball of grief had finally struck a waterline.
My Oma was buried in the same cemetery as my mom. They bought one of these three-story graves where the person who goes first is at the bottom, then you have the next layer, and then I guess it's more affordable. And so when we were at the gravesite, it came up again. It was like, oh my gosh, I'm reliving something that the first time I hadn't had an opportunity to grieve or mourn because I was just a kid. I think kids have a way of tuning out bad because they don't have the language for it. And now I'm a man and I'm weeping at the gravesite. And I knew then that I'm mourning now. It's almost like emotionally you don't get to progress further than things that you've overcome in that emotional place. If you don't deal with that stuff, then the next time something happens that triggers an event like that, you return, in a sense, you become a 12-year-old again in that moment.
27-year-old Josh met 12-year-old Josh at the side of the very same gravesite. But this time, 15 years later, Josh didn't dodge the grief. Instead, he invited it in.
At that time, I was freelancing as an actor and as a musician, and I was basically just sitting around at home, you know, going for auditions, typical things that actors do, and whenever a gig comes up, I'd go and do the gig. There was no career, basically. I also came out of a long-term relationship, and I felt quite alone, actually, and I think that is actually what brought it all up, because for the first time in 15 years, I was alone.
15 years earlier, the death of his mom had started this chain of events that led to Josh becoming an artist, a storyteller, and in time his own person. While Josh wasn't able to deal with his mother's passing when he was 12, or in the immediate years thereafter, it was his Oma's passing that shook the ground beneath him.
I think that the things that I hadn't dealt with were then unlocked. It was like, okay, we're going to work with this now. You know, you need to go there now. Now you have to. It was good. It was needed. And almost like there was a hard reset that was happening. You know, like hard reset, like let's begin again. Time to start again.
when Josh was finally ready to face the sadness, to let it all just be, the melodies and the words that he needed to heal found him.
I'd written a song which was almost like my catharsis, a song about my mom's passing away and what I'd gone through. If I go down to the piano and I start playing something and some melody spills out and some words, and if I follow that thing to its logical conclusion and it becomes a piece of art, then I feel almost as though I've dealt with it now. And I felt like that song was a way in which I was able to express something about that situation without necessarily being confrontational.
The wrecking ball of grief had swung right past 12-year-old Josh, but others in the family didn't have the same experience. The grief hit them hard immediately.
I mean, what happened to my mom? You can't blame anybody for that. Maybe the way that it was handled wasn't the most emotionally mature. You know, I guess people were also just trying to protect me. When I wrote that song about my mom, I could perform that song to an audience without choking up. I can do that now without choking up, because it's almost like the chapter is closed.
Looking back over the span of his life, Josh can say that he's always gravitated towards stories, but he's been a bit hesitant to don the label of storyteller.
People started saying I'm a storyteller before I took on that role. You know, it was like, Josh tells great stories. And even in the music realm, it's like, yeah, he's a great songwriter, but actually he's a great storyteller. And that was like, okay, people keep saying this. What is it? Because I've been focusing on chord progressions and melodies and all of the things that exist inside of a song. But people keep saying, oh, he's a great storyteller, man. And so I went down this rabbit hole of exploring, okay, who am I? Looking back, like, what's my lineage? And then why am I here? Like, what's the purpose? And then is that okay? Which is a big one. It's like, is it okay to be a little bit different and be a little bit weird and quirky?
Josh is now 37 years old. Another 10 years wiser for having felt the full extent of his grief. And now he can answer those three questions his drama lecturer had posed. Who am I? Why am I here? And is it okay? Josh knows who he is now, and he knows he's still becoming.
I came up with this little theory that maybe I'm a scribe. You know, if we're going to use archetypal language, maybe I am a scribe for this little pocket of time that we have in this little corner of this world. I feel like the becoming process is something that you just never arrive. You're just always, you're on the way somewhere.
And through the processing, Josh also knows why his stories matter.
The why always seems to have to do with helping other people, like being of service. What does the world need? If my experience of grief is something that is meant to move someone to dealing with their own grief, and I've sort of come through it and I've overcome that or I've dealt with it, then it means that the next person who's going to come across that story, they'll be better for it. And then, is it okay?
Josh is sitting across from me in a studio in Seapoint as we record this conversation. We've both come a long way since our carefree days at a campus radio station in Stellenbosch. We're dads now, husbands, creative spirits carving out untraditional career paths. And today, Josh is a little fatigued and recovering from a head cold, but he still exudes an easy happiness, a smile that lights up the room with an aura that might be slightly faint, but is still reminiscent of yellow and Labradors. And then he looks at me and sees through the coat of happiness that I tend to put on when I sit behind a microphone.
I mean, people look at you and they're like, yeah, the radio guy, cool, happy radio guy. But actually then you listen to your first episode and it's like, oh my gosh, like Sean's been going through stuff, you know?
Yeah, I guess I have. We all have. So then, is it okay?
Is it okay to be all of this randomness, all of this meandering and all of this multifaceted, multidisciplinary stuff? Is it okay? Yes, it's okay.
Today, Josh is a multimedia storyteller, whether on screen, behind a microphone, or with pen in hand. He lives in Cape Town, raising two young children with his beautiful wife. And the song playing right now? Josh wrote this for his mom. It's called Life is a Fleeting Bird, and you can find it on Spotify. Go on, subscribe to Something Shifted now, and never miss a human-centered story. You can find more episodes and ways to support the podcast at somethingshifted.co.za. And because you've listened all the way to the end, we want to share our Something Shifted soundtrack with you. It's a compilation of songs we've listened to while making this season. Songs that make us feel a little less lonely and a lot more empowered. The link is in the show notes. Enjoy. Many thanks to Rue, my executive producer, for additional writing on this episode. And as always, thank you for listening.